Good evening to you, Kenneth, and thank you for joining us, man.
Good evening to you and to the listeners of 702.
Great one, man. So you wrote this piece that was published via Independent Online, Ramaphosa's address missed an opportunity to deal with the lost youth. Now, obviously, a lot of people would then turn around to you and say to you, but hang on a second, Kenneth, before we hasty in slamming the president for his lack of addressing the youth, he did tell us that he is going to try to eradicate poverty. He's promised us 2 million jobs within 10 years. And key to that, 2 million jobs in 10 years, is this youth unemployment program that he's going to set up that specifically looks at youth unemployment. Surely that is a step in the right direction?
It is, and that is very positive. We must not even undermine it. But then you look at the figure, 2,000, and then you try to look at the number of young people who are graduated, who are unemployed right now, and the number of people who are losing their jobs every day, who are retrenched. Just yesterday we heard that MultiChoice will be retrenching about close to 2,000 employees. Standard Bank and many others, small businesses are closing down. Many our siblings are graduating every day. So that number is growing every day. And I don't think that 2 million people is a fair number. We are still going to have many people in the street looking or begging for jobs. So it is going to satisfy the numbers that we are having. But it's a step towards the right direction, but it's not the solution to the problems that we are having. Right now, I think the president was supposed to say, I've got the plan to support the Ministry of Youth in the presidency and to support, to capacitate the NYDA to ensure that the youth are going to be absorbed into entrepreneurship, because to be honest, the jobs are not there. So us as the young people, we have to find ways to create jobs for other people in the townships, in the villages, and elsewhere. So there are no jobs, and the jobs that the president is talking about, that 2 million people, we are not even sure where those jobs are going to come from. Is he talking about the EPWP, where people are paid about 800 rand per month?
Yeah.
And we don't know where those opportunities are going to come from, because he did not lay out his plans that these are where the jobs are going to come from.
As a starting point, mate, let's start from the beginning, because there was sort of a lead up to the next issue that I wanted to discuss with you, and I think it will help us start at the beginning. What are, in your opinion, you know, some of the problems bedeviling and persisting with the youth today? In other words, you know, when you say lost youth, you're talking about a problem that's persistent, that just doesn't seem to go away, and you know, sort of sits with our young people on a persistent basis, right? And the key question then in that particular instance is, what are some of these problems that you've identified that you can single out that still persist and bother our youth to this very day?
I will point everything else to colonialism and to what it has done, the scars that we are dealing with today. I think that the problem has to go back to our education system. The fundamental tool that was used by apartheid was education, was to ensure that they produce, or apartheid government, they produce inferior education. And that's what they did. These are the results that we are seeing today. So after 1994 or after in the post-1994, we never really sat down and say, how do we undo what the apartheid or what Hendrik Verwoerd done to our people? So we have never done that. We have never sat down and then discussed the method of undoing what was done from colonialism or particularly from 1948 up until now.
Mm.
That was the ideology that was entrenched there into our people. That is why today you are seeing what you are seeing in the street today. It was systematic, and we have to come up with the system that is going to counter that which has taken place, especially into our people. So we have never really done that. We continued with what we had already been used to. So we have never really sat down and come with ways in which we are going to counter what was what was done to our thinking in all those years. So that is the result of what had taken place about 300 years ago. So we have to sit down and redo our education system so that we undo what had taken place about 300 years, because the education system does not serve the societal needs of our current dispensation. So you have got this population, a youthful population, which that which is very fortunate, which does go to higher education and higher institution of education and training, and they get there, and once they get out there with their diploma, certificates and degrees, they go out and they beg for jobs instead of creating jobs.
So, I mean, in terms of that then, I mean, you've clearly identified the education system as being central to this particular problem. I mean, what about the education system would you like to change? Because it's one thing to diagnose the problem, it's another issue to treat the problem, as you would be well aware. I mean, you know, it's great if your doctor can tell you that, listen, you have the flu. It's a bit of a problem, and the doctor doesn't know how to help you treat the flu or how to manage the flu at the very minimum. So my question to you then is, how do we then treat this national flu that's of epic proportions and obviously robbing us of skills and opportunity and giving young people the tools to start their own businesses, to be entrepreneurial, and you know, for them to be able to take charge of their own lives rather than being dependent on government by far and large?
I'm saying that let us not pilot the education system from Australia or from any other country outside Africa or outside South Africa. We must get our African intellectual in one room with our parents and everyone, every stakeholder in our country, and come with a system that is going to work in our favor, rather than going somewhere in the Western Europe to take the system that had failed even in Europe. You call it ODE and other many system which have been piloted from those countries to try them in our country, and they have not been working for the past 25 years. So we must get our African intellectual in one room with our parents, with everyone who have got love for Africa or for South Africa in their hearts, and we produce the system that is going to work in our favors. Our history, our background, our economy is not the same as those other countries of outside Africa. So we are unique, and we think that the education system obviously is going to be unique. It is not going to be the same as that one which is coming from the Western Europe. So we are very unique. We have got the different or unique history. We've got a very unique economy. Though we are part of the global or global village, but we are very unique, and we have to come with the system that is going to work for us. We have tried those systems from other countries, and they have not been working. The education system is very central to the economic system, and the education system should be the one which is going to ensure that we the economy should serve the majority of the people, or the mainstream economy should at least cater for about 90% of the people. And right now it is not doing so. That is why we are having that debate where people are saying the Reserve Bank should be nationalized, and you have these ones who are saying it should not be nationalized, simply because others are feeling that the majority of the people are not part of the mainstream economy. And you have got many graduates who are begging for jobs, and that is simply because the education system has failed them, and no one has been doing anything. You have got many education experts who have been raising this issue, who have been coming with critics from 1994 up until now, and they are not being taken into consideration.
So I hear you, and you're giving me quite a mouthful. I mean, there's a lot of things that we need to break down and actually analyze in terms of what you're saying there, and to see what is, you know, how what your what is the validity of your input in those particular spaces. So if you don't mind, if we can just break them into little chunks. I mean, the first thing I'd like to understand is that obviously you conceded to the fact that we live in a globally competitive environment. So in other words, the world is connected, more connected than it has ever been. And the platinum and the gold and, you know, whatever else we're producing in South Africa finds its way, and the iron ore finds its way to countries like China. It finds its way to countries like the USA, et cetera, you know. And all of them make use of it in one way or the other. And similarly also, that's why we have, for example, Huawei cell phones and Apple this and Apple that, because it's a connected world. We're trading with each other on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, in as much as you are conceding to the fact that you are saying that as a country we are unique and we have unique circumstances, which I would concede to some extent, I mean, how do we then become insular, in essence, develop our own education system that caters for our unique needs while still being part of the global village and a world that's increasingly becoming globalized? And ultimately, if you find yourself in a very difficult position, if you do not participate in that, if you have to think about countries like North Korea, Iran, and so on, countries that are seen as isolationist countries, they're finding it difficult to survive, isn't it?
It is true. I would say that as a country, we should decide, or our government should decide, that what are we offering to the world as South Africa? I'll say to you, Cuba, when you talk about Cuba, someone think of a doctor, or we think of medicine. When you talk about Japan, we think of technology. When you talk about Israel, we think of technology. That is because the government or their government, those countries, they have taken a decision that we are going to focus on this. That is how we are going to brand ourselves. But as South Africa, we should then sit down and say, what are we going to sell to the world? And we have not come to an agreement or consensus as to that. What are we going to sell? Our people or the political party, especially those who want to take that position of being leftist, they are talking about the mineral resources of this country. But those mineral resources are going to be depleted in about 100 years. Then what are we going to talk about?
You're being very generous with your 100 years. I mean, less than that. In some instances, some analysts are looking at 30 years. They're beginning to be, we won't be able to exploit many of the resources that we have at the moment.
That is true. We are no longer going to be talking about gold, we are no longer going to be talking about platinum. Then what will we be offering the world? We should sit down and say we should capacitate our people. We should invest more on human capital than we do on the natural capital. We can't invest in gold. We can't invest in platinum anymore. We should capacitate our people. That is why I'm saying in the article, our president should be honest with the people. The government does not have a mandate to create jobs. All what government should do is to create an atmosphere for investors to come into the country and invest. And they should be offering tax incentives and everything that is making it possible for investors to come from North Korea, to come from other countries, to come and invest in this country. That is how jobs can be created.
That doesn't sound really leftist to me, what you are saying there, Kenneth. I mean, a lot of people would turn around and say, but that's exactly what, I'm pretty sure if I had to speak to any one of the CEOs that Bruce Whitfield would have spoken to on The Money Show today, they would say the exact same thing that you're saying there, that ultimately we need to create a conducive environment for investment. Maybe they won't ask North Korea to invest, because North Korea doesn't really quite have money to invest in any particular country except for their own at the moment. But the point is ultimately that a lot of people are saying that we need investment, and that we need greater investment from countries with developed economies, countries that have money to be able to invest in South Africa for business purposes.
That is true. That is true. But that is going to benefit a lot of people in the country. I mean, I'm talking about lot of percentage, especially as you know that our population is very youthful. Those people are sitting in the street, in the township and in the villages. They are without jobs. They are without anything to do. That is the only thing that can work so far. So you can't say that you better have people in the street so that you can remain or you can be known as leftist. It is not going to work. We should be attracting those investors to come into our country and invest money into the country. They should be allowed to come and invest that money, because if you are going to say you want to be, or you want to be a socialist-oriented, to run socialist-oriented economy, then who is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit the politicians up there, or is it going to benefit the people at the bottom? Right now, the people at the bottom are the ones who are suffering. So you have to make a way of selling yourself to other countries, so that those people who have got money, who have got capital, they can come into the country and invest. That is why people are also outraged when they are seeing a statement coming from Ms. Zinzi Mandela, because to some people she's scaring investors away. But to those who want to those who want to be popular, she is a revolutionary the way she's doing, and she should continue doing that. But someone with money sitting somewhere in America will not come to South Africa and invest their money, because they are not sure whether they are risking their last capital or their money is safe and is going to grow. So people want certainty. They are not sure what is going on in South Africa. That is why even last year, President of America wanted certainty from President Ramaphosa to know exactly what is going on with the issue of land, because people don't understand really what is going on in South Africa. Should I invest my money, or should I just stay with my money and grow our economy locally wherever they are?
I hear you on that. I mean, there's quite a bit that you've given us there, but I'm also then looking at your proposition around education and what that then means for the youth of South Africa, because one of the things that's quite clear is that we are in the fourth industrial revolution. I'm pretty sure that you will agree with me that South Africa is far behind in terms of that. We went through obviously the internet phase, we went through social media, all of these unicorns, these multi-billion dollar unicorns that we went through. And then unfortunately, we didn't even catch that wave. You know, you and I can't today talk and boast about the fact that we have our own social media platform in South Africa that's of any significance whatsoever. Instead, we're using the American stuff, Twitter and Facebook. I guess the only other alternative in all likelihood is perhaps the Chinese alternative, which is Tencent in those platforms there, WeChat and so forth and so on. So what I'm just trying to understand from your side then is that faced with us having missed the wave of the fourth industrial revolution and us still having to catch up, I mean, what is the unique South African offering that we can provide, Kenneth? Because China is the manufacturer of the world. India is, the IT consultant of the world, quite frankly. And, many other countries, the US is obviously the big commercial animal that just gives us anything and everything that we want, from coffee to movies to whatever you can possibly buy. That's what they're giving us. What is it that we can offer as South Africans that's unique to South Africa, number one? But number two, still, makes a turnover, a decent turnover, where those young people that you are talking about actually have a real future that they can sell to the rest of the world?
I would say to you that we should look into the tourism sector. That's what also President Ramaphosa talked about. Mm. But once you talk about tourism sector, then you have to ensure that your country is more safer for people to come and visit or to tour. Right now, you know that the crime rate is going up every day in our country. So obviously, tourists there, or the number of people who are touring the country is going to decline. So also, our people or our government should ensure that they invest more in their own people. I'll give you an example and say that Israel is in the desert. There is political instability, of course. But just 10 years ago, the government made sure they came with an initiative to say they were going to encourage young people, especially those who were coming from school, to ensure that that they are supporting them in the startup initiative. Hence, today, Israel is known as one of those countries who are doing much better in the tech industry than any other country. So it is also in the hands of our government in South Africa to say, government should sit down and say, we can support our own people, especially young people, because it's a very youthful population in South Africa in particular, or generally in Africa. It is a very youthful population. To say, this is what we can do for our people. We can cut tax, or we can give tax incentives. We can capacitate NYDA and capacitate the Ministry of Youth and ensure that we support them to start their own businesses, whether in technology or any other sector.
But Kenneth, can I just stop you there for a sec? I mean, I got the gist of what you're saying there, but I got Heather from City Bowl in Cape Town that has a quick comment for you. And then I'll just read one or two WhatsApps that I've also received, looking at what you are saying at this particular point in time. Let me just go to Heather quickly. Heather, good evening to you, and thank you for joining us. Short and sharp, please.
Yeah. Gershon, if we chose climate change, as I see, how is the world going to cope with climate change? We could become the best and the biggest in the world.
So what you're saying is not just an environmental answer for the challenge of climate change, as an example, but quite simply looking at, obviously, the impact that it would have commercially, the impact that it would have on business. Is that what you're suggesting?
And designing new products so that we actually can cut better ways of getting rid of all the rubbish that we don't know what to do with at the moment, turn it into something else. Better ways of building homes so that we can cope with the climate that's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter. Storing water underneath our homes. I mean, just if we became excellent at doing that, and including that agriculture, because agriculture is going to be very drastically affected. I heard your guest talking about Israel, and I think that kind of combination would be dynamic.
Okay, now I hear what you're saying. It's a very interesting proposal, and I think especially you got something there with global climate change and or basically environmental impact by human beings, because obviously we know that that's a massive issue at the moment and it's a massive problem that we do need to solve. Thanks for that one, Heather. That was Heather out of City Bowl in Cape Town. I mean, she does have a point there, and it goes back to, you know, in essence, South Africa being on par with the rest of the world in terms of its understanding of what some of the massive challenges are and what some of the biggest challenges are that are facing us at the moment there. Kenneth, I'm sure that you almost don't have a choice but to agree with what she's saying, that quite frankly, we have a serious problem with climate, we have a serious problem with the environment, and that maybe that could be South Africa's unique offering. In essence, what sets South Africa apart and makes South Africa a marketable country, similar to how China is marketable or India is marketable or any other one of the countries that you can mention throughout the world that obviously has a strong financial success.
No, I would agree, and I should also mention that I've been encouraged. I've seen various NGOs in South Africa protesting, calling for other countries to abide by respecting the climate or the environment. Also, we have seen a protest in Australia. So South Africa can also brand itself as one of those countries which does respect the environment, because it is true that the effects of climate change are affecting us and they are going to affect our grandchildren in future. So it is basically I agree with everything that she has said.
But I think beyond that, I think the interesting thing that stood out for me about Heather's call in particular there, Kenneth, is the fact is her call for us being able to brand it to make it a a business solution. So in other words, beyond an NGO protesting anti-global climate change, but that, you know, we go take it a step further, that maybe you and I can start a business that specifically focuses on introducing solutions, whether it be to business, whether it be to governments, to global climate change and environmental impact. I mean, the one thing, for example, that any government in this world has not been able to figure out yet is how do we get rid of non-renewable plastics? You know what I mean? Plastics that you single-use plastics.
Yes.
How do we clean up our oceans of the plastic waste as another example? How then do we, as a country that's a massive, the biggest polluter on the African continent, how do we then ensure that we can actually bring down those pollution levels as well? So those are some of these solutions that I think that Heather is envisioning there, that you can actually turn that into a business. But again, my question to you is, how then, in terms of conventional wisdom on a global level, where the world, you know, whether it's a scientist in Japan, scientists in India, or scientists in the USA or Europe, for that matter, telling us that this is the impact of global climate change, how do we ignore that stuff, or do we take that into account in this new education system that you're proposing?
Can you rephrase your question again?
I'm saying, look, global climate change is but one example. It's something that's part of conventional wisdom globally, right? It's a global it's a global thing. It's not a uniquely South African piece of research or a uniquely South African piece of work. We know that this is something that is actually happening from a global perspective. So, in other words, we can't really isolate ourselves in terms of our knowledge and our education, because it shows there in that instance that that global efforts in terms of education, that's what informs us a little better about the world that we live in. I mean, surely that slightly contradicts what you said earlier about having to develop a unique education system.
I can't really get your question.
Okay, look, well, let's move on. I see that we have Sibu Siso from Pretoria on the line, and he also wants to quickly comment on what we're discussing there. Sibu Siso in Pretoria, how are you doing, man?
Hi, good and you, Christian.
Great stuff, man. What's on your mind? Your point for Kenneth very quickly.
Yeah, I think what we have not realized is that South Africa is very strong in the engineering field.
In the what field?
Engineering.
Engineering, okay, yeah.
Yeah, civil and construction.
Sure.
We are quite strong. Yes, we are seeing the big companies going down.
Mm.
But you must look at the small guys that are building their businesses. They are guys from remote areas that are building strong businesses in construction. They do quality work.
Okay.
I think it's quick. I don't want to say the media, but there's been a tendency in the country to call contractors tenderpreneurs. And that is wrong. There are people who are focused in construction. They know what they're doing.
Mm.
They structured in the businesses. They deliver quality work. I think in the world, and by the way, I've not evaluated the capacity of the entire world in terms of this field. But I can tell you that in the, say, 70s or 80s, South Africa developed what they called an HVS, which is Heavy Vehicle Simulator.
Yeah.
That was used to test roads. It would, you know, a road is meant to carry heavy traffic.
Yeah.
So it simulated the heavy traffic over the duration of time. The world bought HVSs from South Africa.
Mm.
Now you're looking. You go look in the black community. I'm talking about the black community now, specifically in the engineering construction field. There are strong, upcoming people. We don't even need the big companies. Among the small guys, if they can form joint ventures, we are a strong nation in engineering.
I'm sure I hear you there very quickly, but I mean, surely, you know, in this particular instance, let's say, for example, I started up a construction company tomorrow. I take my father, who's now retired, who's very much experienced in that field, great at construction, understands how the system works, etc., etc. Surely it's up to me and my dad to ensure that we make our services saleable to the rest of the world. So in other words, we have to ensure that we, that we market sufficiently and do all of those things. I mean, I can't really expect that, government needs to assist me with that, because ultimately it's a private company. And if I have a service that I want to take on the global scale, I should surely be the one putting in it. Or are you saying the government needs to support those particular efforts?
No. The government does support the effort in terms of growing those businesses internally in the country so that they can be strong in the country and then be able to reach out to the entire Africa and the world. Now we must understand. We must understand a couple of things. One is that black people, and when I say black, I don't necessarily mean African.
Yeah, sure.
But in terms of Africans, in the apartheid days, there were contractors and developers who were working in the homeland areas, and did very well. So inherently there are people who in whose genes construction and building is built. So we are very, very, very strong. If we can nurture that, let India be the IT capital of the world, we're not going to compete with them. I think they're able to live on a... currency, rupee or whatever.
Yeah.
They're able to live on that. Why do we live on a dollar? And are still able to compete among us. And our youngsters that are, some of whom are not even educated in terms of training at university.
Okay. Point made. Thank you so much for that call there, Spoo. Very much interesting. I mean, Kenneth, what do you have to say about that? I mean, I hear what he's saying about, the construction industry and, being able to take that to the global scale. And that's another example. We've spoken about tourism. We've spoken about Heather from Citibull coming through and telling us about solutions for global climate change. You yourself mentioned tourism as an industry. So in other words, it seems that there's all kinds of possibilities for us to export our skills and to be part of this global market, but it doesn't seem that we've been taking advantage of this. So what would you have liked to have heard from the president in addressing those particular issues or those particular examples that have been given?
Yeah, there is so much that we can offer to the world, but we have not been doing that adequately. I would say I expected President to say more than what he had said, but he had said enough. I'm hoping that in these 5 years he will do more. There are a lot of sectors. Many people can even think of so many things that can be offered to the world out there. Tourism, as I had mentioned, he had mentioned construction. I think it can also work. There are a lot of countries which are also looking for that skill, and it's not something that you'll say it will go away even in 200 years. So it is something that is going to be ongoing for so many, many centuries.
I have a simple question for you, Kenneth. I mean, how is Rwanda doing it? How is Ghana doing it? How is Kenya doing it? Mind you, we're talking about African countries that don't have the South African rand and the South African size of an economy. I mean, we are, after all, somewhere between the first and the second largest economy on the African continent. Yet we're looking at less than 1% growth, but these are countries that are growing at about 6 or 7% on an annual basis and are projected to be growing at a faster rate. They compare to competing in a global environment. And I've been lucky enough to have traveled to some of these countries, and I've seen... Yeah. That South Africa, as an example, plays a major role. If you drive through Ghana, through Accra, you see a Standard Bank everywhere. If you go to, many South African companies have a very strong presence there. So my key question is, why are they getting it right? And we seem to be lagging behind. We're just struggling from one disaster to the next.
Very, very inspiring. Ghana, Rwanda, and many other countries. Tanzania under John Magufuli and many other states in Africa are doing quite well for themselves. I think one of the major issues is the one I had told you about, the very important sector when people are deciding to come and invest in your country. They are looking at issues such as corruption, how you are handling your affairs as the country. And we have not been doing well, especially under the administration of Jacob Zuma. And today we are expecting President Cyril Ramaphosa to stabilize what was going wrong, or what the investors think was going wrong under President Jacob Zuma, because there was a bit of instability here and there. So in those countries, Rwanda and Ghana and other states in Africa, there are a bit of stability. You don't have that in Lesotho. You don't have that a bit in Zimbabwe and many other countries which are struggling. But you have got that in Rwanda, you have got that in Ghana and other states in Africa, which are doing quite well. You have seen how our parliament deteriorated during President Zuma. So when people are looking at that, sitting from their comfort zone in other countries, they can't come and invest their money when such situations is prevailing. The issue of corruption also, it's something that is very big. You saw how KPMG was colluding with government, or how it was conducting itself. So those are some of the issues also, which are affecting our own economy and how the investors are viewing us. So you don't have that in those countries. Rwanda is doing very well, and I think we should learn one or two things from them.
So in the last 10 minutes of what we're discussing here, I'd like to understand from you, what is your thesis then? I mean, it's one thing for us to be able to isolate and identify, and as I said, diagnose what the problems are, what is the illness that we're supposedly suffering from as a nation. But it's another thing for us to be able to go back and to look at what is the situation actually. How do we go about fixing it? So what would you have liked to have heard from President Cyril Ramaphosa in the State of the Nation address to address some of the concerns that you raise in your opinion piece and on an ongoing basis?
Basically, what I'm saying in the opinion piece is that Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa should be much, much, much broader and much firmer. He was, as he was saying, that the people who are owing Eskom or who should be paying for services should do so. And he should not beat about the bush when he's talking about that. He should not even shy away. We are becoming slowly an enemy state where people are expecting to be dealt houses, where people are expecting government to do everything for themselves. I'm talking about someone who's at around 25 years old, who is turning 21 years, is expecting government to build them RDP houses. That is not sustainable. So Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa should stand up and say that is not going to happen. What the government is going to do is that the NYDA is going to help you create yourself opportunities. That is what I expected from President Cyril Ramaphosa, because that is the behavior that has been entrenched into our people from 1994. It's not our people who said they wanted houses from the government. It is the government, because they wanted to attract them to vote for them and promises them more things which cannot be given or finished to these people. So today these people are complaining because they are used to getting everything without even waiting for it. So President Cyril Ramaphosa should make it clear that those who are owing for government services should pay or should do what is just. And those who have been stealing the money from government, they are going to be locked up. People want to see action. We have been talking about corruption from 1994, and very little has been done to ensure that those who have been on the wrong side of the law are facing the full might of the law.
So in terms of, your piece specifically being aimed at the youth and trying to, how do I put it? Improve on their lives, okay? I mean, surely under those circumstances, I'd just like to understand from your side, what is it that your proposal is? I mean, what is it that you would have liked to have heard from the president specifically addressing the youth?
What I expected Mr. Ramaphosa to have said during the State of the Nation address was the budget or to say that the budget was going to be increased, and that is at least what we could have been expecting from the finance minister, that it is going to be increased in the NYDA. The same will be done in the Ministry of Youth,
yeah.
And the same will be done in that ministry, which is catering for small businesses. But I did not hear that. I only heard about the 2 million jobs, creating an impression that the government is going to create those jobs for young people. It is not enough, and it is creating an impression that now government is doing something against unemployment. So I expected President Cyril Ramaphosa to say that those graduates who are sitting at home are going to be helped, to be able to help themselves. But I did not hear him saying that. The number, the figures that he had given, the 2 million, is not enough when I'm trying to count all those people who are unemployed, who are sitting at home, all those people who are retrenched every day. It is not making sense, because when you are saying that you are going to help only 2 million people in the space of 10 years, really it proves that you are dreaming, and it's not something that the country should be rejoicing. Instead, what I expected to hear from him was that every graduate, either you have got a higher certificate, a diploma, or any other thing which makes you unemployed, you are going to get something so that you are going to help yourself. And what I expect, because I'm seeing that the local municipalities also in the country are deteriorating, and you go to other countries, you see them using, I think I heard you talking about the consultants. Other countries are using that in their government. And I expect this thing of tendering or the procurement to outsource a skill. At least they should be doing that by outsourcing graduates, people who are employed, and not people who are having membership of a certain political party. Once you employ or you outsource a graduate, someone with a relevant qualification in that particular field, then it means that you have halved or you have dealt the issue of unemployment. But if you are giving it to a comrade who is not even competent to do that particular job, and that is why you are seeing our roads deteriorating, because they are not being done by people.
Kenneth, my friend, we are out of time. Much appreciated. Interesting conversation. All the best to you and good luck, man.
Thank you very much, and to the listeners of 702.
Cheers, man. There was Kenneth Mokgatle. He's a political commentator and media practitioner. Wrote a piece in IOL, that's Independent Online, saying Ramaphosa's address missed an opportunity to deal with lost youth. Now, based on what he had to say, are you in agreement? Are you convinced by what you just heard? 3 minutes to go before we get to 11.